Hello, everyone. Welcome again to Spinach Street Chat. Mixing things up a little bit, going a slightly different route, and this is all directly because of our feedback from our recent bikepacking survey. Y'all gave us a lot of good information. We promise that we're going to take that information and provide what you're looking for, help you with the tools you're needing, help you with the adventures you're wanting, that sort of thing. One of the huge feedback items we got back on that bikepacking survey, and it definitely applies to gravel events and gravel riding as well, is people wanted to know how to find routes. Makes a lot of sense. Personally, I love exploring and creating routes. That's why I do what I do for a living. I fully understand that that's not quite everyone's cup of tea. It does take a lot of time. It does take a lot of practice. It does take a lot of hit and miss and finding dead ends and stuff like that. Some people just want the route available to them at their fingertips. And today we're going to talk about how to make that happen from a realistic perspective. It's not Santa Claus. It's not just going to show up on your mantle on Christmas morning, all the routes that you ever want at any time. It does take a little bit of work, but not a whole lot. The main thing is vetting the information and making sure you're getting quality routes. So without further ado, let's give a quick outline of what we're looking for today. By the end of this episode, you will know how and where to find good gravel and bike packing routes and how to navigate with them. Again, by the end of this episode, if you were wanting all that information at your fingertips in the first 30 seconds, like a TikTok video or something like that, this probably isn't the source for that information. We're not going to go completely in depth like Encyclopedia Britannica or anything like that, but we do like to explain the basics of the whys and the wherefores and how certain things work, just so people have a well-rounded perspective. But we're not going to go 80 levels down. Let's start off quickly. There's several basic sources of route information that pretty much everyone has access to. Number one, online gravel and bikepacking groups, be it Facebook pages, forums, whatever other sources might be out there. Most people are familiar with some of these online groups. Another source of the information are existing friends and acquaintances, people you know who ride gravel or go bikepacking and go off on adventures, and maybe you reach out to them for some information. Another source of this information is previous events. Somebody that's hosted a gravel grinder or a bikepacking event or adventure or something like that, you're aware that the feedback on that route was really cool and something you want to try out, but you weren't able to make that event. Lots of times that route information is available to use down the road as well. Bicycle clubs, gravel clubs, subscription services that are out there, various, for lack of a better term, pay-to-play environments. It's kind of a catch-all. Cycling itself is a niche. Gravel cycling is a even further niche. And then you take it down to that bikepacking level, and it's a niche within a niche within a niche. Highly specialized. But there are clubs, tight-knit groups, and subscription services out there aimed at those groups that can have access to that specialized information. Online routing sites, probably the biggest source of this sort of information. Ride with GPS, Strava, Komoot, Gaia GPS. There's several of them out there. We're going to focus on one of them later on, but that doesn't dismiss the validity of any of the others. But we want to simplify things. The final source for routes information, like I said, this is pretty much what I do, create your own. But that is some kind of advanced level stuff. So this episode isn't going to dig into creating your own routes at all. We may touch on some of the aspects of it here and there accidentally, but this is not a route building episode. So the way this is going to be structured, we do it in the tell, show, do format. And again, we want people to understand the whys and the hows of each of these points, the tools we're talking about, the positives and the negatives. So basically, I'm going to tell you about the good and the bad of each of those sources. I'm going to show/explain the basics of how the functionality works. If you're watching this on YouTube, we'll probably have some screenshots that reinforce it. But I'm trying to make this where It works in podcast and audio only format as well. And then quite frankly, after we talk about the whys and the hows and explain and show you how to do it, the idea is for you to go out and do it for yourself. Practice it, get familiar with it. And hey, hit us with some feedback. Maybe I didn't do a really good job of explaining one feature or something's out of date now. Maybe we need to update it. Let's go ahead and go back to those basic sources of route information. And I'll talk about very quickly the positives and negatives of each of them. First, we're going to talk about online gravel and bike packing groups, the pros, the advantages of them. First off is choices. Those online groups, there's a host of them out there, particularly on Facebook, but Reddit, online forums tied to specific industry sites, tools providers, bike parts, bicycle brands, whatever. There's a plethora of specialized groups that are discussing adventure riding and routes and things like that. The other advantage of these groups is the accessibility. It's something that's always there 24 hours a day, as long as you have internet access. It's something you have access to when you're in the middle of the woods, potentially, as long as you have cell service. Another advantage, particularly when you start getting at the Facebook level, potentially, for these online groups, is they can be very geo-specific. You can find Houston area gravel grinders. You can find Northern California bike packing. You can find Missouri Katy Trail adventure cycling group or things like that. It can get very, very specific for the discipline and the location or a combination thereof. And then as a byproduct of that, another advantage of these online groups is local expertise. If you're in another part of the country and you're going to travel to Florida and want to find some gravel routes, you can get information and feedback from people that are right there in Central Florida that are going to give you that information. Local expertise is an invaluable tool. There's no doubt about it. Now, some of the disadvantages or cons from these online gravel and bike packing groups, that sometimes they can be a little cliquish. If you're an outsider, they may not be overly receptive to you. Sometimes they can be a little myopic as well, depending on who's the administrator, who's overseeing things, or who has the loudest voice in the group. You may be on an e-bike, and they may be anti-e-bike, and you'll hear about it if you share that information. They may be leaning a certain political way or religious way, or you know, you're in Georgia, I'm in Alabama, we don't want to have anything to do with you Bulldogs, whatever. A lot of times at the local group level, the personalities can come into play. And that can sometimes contribute to kind of a big fish, little pond syndrome. An admin for the group or somebody that, again, has the loudest voice, maybe sometimes they might feel a little superior sometimes. So you just have to get to know the personalities and how things work. The next source we talked about were friends and acquaintances. The advantages of utilizing information from friends and acquaintances, and I do use friends and acquaintances because particularly from those online groups, you may get familiar with people and their personalities and their tendencies and their history and what they've done and things like that. So it might be an acquaintance that lends credibility along those lines. So that gives you credible info from a verifiable source. That's one of the big advantages of that. It's information you can trust once you're familiar with the person and how they do things. Particularly at the friend level, if it's somebody that you ride with regularly or discuss things with, sit around a campfire with, whatever, they're likely to be familiar with what's a good fit for you. So you may go to an online group, say, hey, I want this great route in Florida. And people that don't know you may not realize that, you know, the biggest thing you hate is riding in sand. And they may send you down a sandy route, for example. Something, you know, loose reference there. And another advantage of utilizing friends and acquaintances is they may not have the information you're looking for, but they may know somebody who is likely to have it. So that can be like, a warm introduction to a new acquaintance from credible. So if I have a friend of mine that says, well, I don't know that, but I know this guy here that I've been riding with for 20 years, he would know that. And then introduce each other to, and everybody's happy. So that's definitely an advantage of utilizing friends and acquaintances and creating more friends and acquaintances. Some of the potential downsides of utilizing friends and acquaintances, oftentimes they will have limited geographically specific knowledge. They may just know what's right there in their county, for example. So if you want to go the next county over, it might be outside of their wheelhouse. But sometimes they may not want to even admit that, though. Sometimes there can be a sense of what I call expertitis when you're dealing with friends and more likely online acquaintances, more so than friends, but people in those Facebook groups or whatever that have a lot of credibility within the group. Sometimes they may not say, I don't know, because they get concerned it might harm their credibility. So just something to be aware of. But when you do get to the friends level of things, you know, if there are misunderstandings or if they recommend something that's not a good fit for you, or you recommend something for them that's not a good fit, it can complicate friendships. If you send somebody down a route that 2 years ago was in fantastic shape and really fun and beautiful, and somewhere in the meantime, it's grown up and they paved one of the roads and it's a high-speed highway now, and you know, stuff like that can complicate friendships. And it's also limited feedback on the routes. You know, if I share a route, it's like, hey, this is the way I see this. This is really, really cool, and that's the way I like it. But like, I kind of have a mountain biking background, so I enjoy gravel routes that can get a little wild and woolly at times. And sometimes, to be quite honest, the gravel riders that come from a true road, you know, discipline background that don't have any mountain biking experience, they get very uncomfortable on some of those routes. So, you know, just keep that in mind. Limited perspective can be an issue. We kind of touched on it a little bit ago. The info itself can be out of date. A friend can reference this fantastic bikepacking route they did and say, oh, this was so fantastic. This was glorious. We had a great 3-day weekend. Everything's wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. But it's quite possible that trip was 15 years ago, and there's no way to know how much stuff has changed. That kind of covers the potential downsides, things to be aware of from utilizing friends and acquaintances for information. Next, we have previous events, and there are definitely some advantages to utilizing known previous events and their information. I'm going to combine one and two together: quality verification and timeliness. Like I was talking about the friend that did the bikepacking trip 15 years ago. Well, if you're utilizing route information from a fairly recent event, well, I know this was in March of this year. Okay. That's going to be some timely information. And particularly on gravel routes these days, lots of gravel routes that are over a year old, 2 years old, 3 years old, you really start getting into, you know, particularly in Texas with the population explosion, you're getting to the point where what was gravel may not be gravel anymore, sort of thing. Same with the bikepacking. What used to be a desolate country road is now a high-speed highway connecting a couple of mid-sized cities, sort of thing. So timeliness is always important. And then the quality verification. You know that if 200 people rode this event in March and you're seeing updates on forums and things like that, that, hey, people really enjoyed this route. So you know it's a good route. The advantage of utilizing previous event data is there's likely to be multiple distances. So if you go to a friend that all they do is multi-day, 10 hours a day of pedaling bikepacking adventures, they're going to show you a route that's 300 miles long. If you go to an event, they're going to have options for multiple skill levels. So if you really need a 100-mile, 3-day bikepacking option, they'll have that for you. If you're looking for a 30-mile gravel route instead of a 100-mile gravel route, the event's likely to have different options. One of the big advantages of utilizing previous events is that the data itself for the routes information, it can be available from multiple sources. So if you have a data source that you're already comfortable with and that you use, Ride with GPS, Strava, Komoot, whatever, if you're already familiar with that tool set and how it works, it's likely, if you know, there are ways you can probably access that information utilizing that technology platform that you're already comfortable with to potentially pull in data. And we're not going to go into the details of all that in this particular episode, but just generally speaking, multiple platforms to pull the data from for your own comfort level. Now, some of the downsides to utilizing events and their data, and definitely be cognizant of this, be aware of these things. There is definitely a potential for trespassing if you're utilizing routes data from events. Let me explain why. There's a couple different factors that come into play on this. Sometimes the staging venue, like for one of our events, the Red River Riot, the staging and parking and everything takes place on a private ranch, on private property, and we utilize several miles of private roads as part of the routes. And obviously we do it with permission when we have our event, but you can't just pull up and park and ride on those private roads any time of the year sort of thing. There's potential for trespass there, but there's also other events that they may have, the venue itself may be a public park or something like that, let's say. But they do negotiate access through private lands to connect their different pieces of the routes together. You know, obviously for Red River Riot, yeah, we're using private roads at the beginning and the end for the venue, but there could be other, like I believe the Rattlesnake Gravel Grind out in Sweetwater. I think that's the name of the town. I believe that they do this where their venue is a public park, but they utilize private ranch land to bypass a high-speed highway. So if you just download the route information and try to follow that route, you could likely be trespassing when it goes over private ranch roads. So definitely be aware of that. Kind of along the same lines, if the event details and routes allow for or take into account resupply points that are provided specifically for that event, water tables, aid stations, whatever. It could be a 100-mile route that during the event, there's five different places to stop for water and snacks and stuff like that. And maybe there's even a cooling fan, who knows? But that's just on event day. Any other time of year, it may be 100 miles in the middle of nowhere where there's absolutely zero amenities. So you have to do proper due diligence, proper research to verify amenities and things like that. Again, that stuff we'll talk about in another episode, narrowing things down to that level. And also depending on your data source, quite frankly, the route data could be very unreliable. For example, if you're using someone's Strava data and download their GPS file, if they missed turns or bailed out for some reason, had a mechanical, got a ride home and forgot to turn their Strava off or whatever, or ride back to the staging area and forgot to turn their Strava off, it may not be the actual course plot that you're downloading and referencing is what their ride data that they recorded is. So if they got lost and missed a turn, or if they bailed out and went down a highway, or if they had a friend pick them up and drive them down the highway, next thing you know, you're on a 80-mile-an-hour road for 14 miles with no shoulder. And kind of somewhat related to that, when you use previous event information, keep in mind that traffic control itself might have been part of the event. Like we used to go over the bridge at the Llano River when we did our Hill Country Hundy out of Llano, and we would have police escort across the bridge early in the morning, going through Llano and going out on the route. And then there was a major highway intersection that we had police protection there as well. So that traffic control made it super safe and very advantageous and made for a great route on event day. But if you just show up at a random point and expect to cross that bridge without, you know, having traffic issues or the high-speed highway or whatever else. So keep that in mind. One of the other sources we talked about for routes data is clubs and subscription services. This is kind of a catch-all. And by clubs, I mean you may be part of a local cycling club or something like that with membership dues. And it may have a gravel specific chapter of the club or things like that. There's various subscription services out there that may provide route data at a cost. Again, we're a niche within a niche within a niche. There's really no way to go over all those different options in a catch-all environment, but just some of the generalities of the advantages of things like that is there's usually going to be at least consistency in the data, some data standardization, so you kind of know what you're getting, what to expect. Each club or service is going to be different from another, but once you get familiar with their nuances, you kind of know what you're dealing. You know, it's like going to McDonald's. If you order a Big Mac in a McDonald's in Oklahoma City, you're going to get a pretty similar Big Mac if you go to one in Chicago. Some of the downsides to clubs and subscription costs, like I said, obviously there's usually a cost of some sort involved, membership fees or subscription fees. And sometimes it's just very limited relevance. Again, niche within a niche within a niche. If you only need a route one time, it may not make sense to sign up for membership dues or subscription services. That kind of rolls into probably the biggest source of routes is online routing sites and platforms that have access to that information. Like, again, Ride with GPS, Strava, Komoot, Gaia GPS, and I'm sure there's others that are out there as well. Probably what Ride with GPS and Strava are probably the two biggest ones, and each has their own advantages. But for all of them, variety is probably a huge part of it. You're probably going to have routes available anywhere you want to look for routes. Of various quality, but generally anywhere you want to look for a route, it's going to be available. Usually these bigger online platforms, you can access it via computer, via an app, maybe even via text message or whatever else, possibly satellite connection. Standardization and repeat usage. Once you get to know how the platform works, you can do the same things over and over. Searchability is a huge advantage of it. Depending on which platform and the tools you use within that platform, you're able to do very specific and narrow searches. Some of the potential downsides for the online routing sites is potentially cost. Most of them have a free capability or a free level, but that may be limited. Questionable routes quality, kind of like what we were talking about with the events data. For one, if you're downloading Strava data, for example, you're downloading ride data. So maybe somebody's starting a route from a private property or has permission from a ranch owner down the road to utilize their roads. Another issue with downloading routes like Ride with GPS, you can download routes from Ride with GPS that nobody has ever ridden. It's just routes people have created with the, I wonder if this goes anywhere. Maybe someday I will get a chance to ride it. So if you do a search and you download routes specifically, there may be zero vetting or verification. It might just be something somebody threw together at 3 o'clock in the morning around a campfire after they had a 12-pack of Ska Decadent. Particularly with Ride with GPS, for example, you might want to lean more towards rides data than routes data from routes that have actually been ridden. But like we talked about, there's issues there as well. And also utilizing those online routing sites, you know, it takes some technical capability, some technical expertise. You need to know how to work the tools. If you're one of those people that just does not get along with apps or computers or anything online, it's going to be a struggle. But in turn, even if you are mildly comfortable with it, but you don't spend a lot of time on that particular platform, you may never get comfortable with the nuances. In a nutshell, there's no perfect solution out there. But I am going to outline what I rely upon the most. But I do want to kind of qualify this. A, I almost never look up routes. I do it, but it's not part of my day in, day out routine for looking at other people's routes and finding other people's routes, because I create my own from scratch. That's just what I do. I actually make a point to try not to look at other people's routes because I don't want to be influenced. I want to follow the map itself, or kind of go organically from when I'm creating a route, what builds upon itself. Now, after I create that route the first time, if I know it's crossing paths with another event, for example, or likely to be, at that point, I may look up other routes that are out there just to make sure it's, again, the Rattlesnake Gravel Grind in Sweetwater, ran into that. I went out there and scouted some routes, mapped some stuff for potentially doing a route out there. And I wasn't even thinking of the Rattlesnake Gravel Grind at the time. It was just, hey, here's a new area that I haven't looked at. And then I put that potential routes together. And after I scouted it, I came home and... Or while I was out there, I think something reminded me that, hey, I think that Rattlesnake Gravel Grind's out here. Because I'd found a really cool venue to host an event from and one really neat road that I really liked a lot. And I brought up their event. It's like, oh, that's the same hosting venue. And that's like their featured road too. So there's no reason for me to do an event that duplicates it at that point. Yeah, I know a lot of people are going to go, well, Kevin, you should have looked at that from the beginning. But again, if I would have, it just would have corrupted everything for my process to make that part of the front end. Because I'm always creating alternates and so forth anyway. Before we go too far, let's just say that's another episode somewhere down the road where we go a little bit more in depth on that. I do lean into the same basic tool set for probably 90% or more of my routes research. I'm not saying it's the only tool people should use, but for my needs, I haven't really found anything better or even close. But this is not me knocking other tools that are out there. What works for me may not work for you, vice versa. I lean almost entirely on Ride with GPS. The standard account is free, so the cost factor isn't there. And basically everything we're talking about here is accessible from the free account. You're able to search for routes and download the routes data with their free account. There are paid levels of the service that include navigation functionality on your phone and some advanced route creation tools, things like that. But what we're talking about now is only what can be done with the free account. Specific to Ride with GPS, we're going to quickly review those advantages and disadvantages of each of those groups we were talking about and see how it comes into play with Ride for GPS now, or Ride with GPS. Keep in mind that technology is always evolving, so some of these details, they'll become dated over time. If you're listening today, for example, it's probably good information for the next week. That said, I know there's something new that just came out and was announced with Ride with GPS, but it's not relevant to this episode. So if I were recording the advanced episode today, it would already be out of date. Anyway, going down a rabbit trail there. How Ride with GPS lines up with the pros and the cons of the other sources we spoke about. So online gravel bikepacking groups. The pros were choices. Well, Ride with GPS probably has access to the most adventure routes anywhere. The other pro was accessibility. Ride with GPS, you can access all that information online and via an app. Online groups advantage geo-specific. Ride with GPS allows you to search by geographic tag and within X miles from this location and things like that. The online groups, another advantage was local expertise. That's probably a win for online groups. There are some ambassadors and local experts on Ride with GPS, but I think the better way to get familiar with those is probably through those traditional groups and find out who does a lot of route creation on Ride with GPS. Like one of our local groups around here, DFW Gravel Grinders, a gentleman named Eugene does a fantastic job of putting routes together. And so you can get his local expertise and get familiar with it through some of the Texas gravel groups on Facebook and probably other places as well. But then when you go to Ride with GPS and you see a route that was created by Eugene, you know, the quality is likely to be there. So it goes both ways. Some of the downsides to the online gravel and bike packing groups. They can be cliquish. Well, that doesn't apply on Ride with GPS. They can be narrow viewed. Doesn't apply on Ride with GPS. And the big fish, little pond syndrome doesn't apply with GPS. So most of the good with the online groups and none of the bad. Utilizing friends and acquaintances, the advantages, credible info from a verifiable source. That's definitely an advantage, but kind of like I talked about with the Eugene story, that can kind of indirectly come into play with Ride with GPS as well. Likely to be familiar with what fits you. That's definitely a win for friends that know your tendencies. And references to other sources, warm introductions, things, definitely another advantage for in-person, real people, friends. So in a nutshell, Ride with GPS is no reason to abandon your friends. Fair enough. Some of the downsides of the friends, acquaintances, potentially limited geographic knowledge from individuals. Well, Ride with GPS has routes everywhere. The expertitis we talked about, not applicable with Ride with GPS. Misunderstandings, complicating friendships, again, not applicable with Ride with GPS. Limited feedback on routes. That can apply with Ride with GPS as well. Actually, possibly even more so. One of the downsides to the online data sources is you might just be downloading fantasy routes that nobody's ever verified at all. Downside to friendships, acquaintances, info can be out of date. That can apply with Ride with GPS as well. But at least on Ride with GPS, you're able to see when a route was created / last updated sort of stuff. So there's a little bit of a filter there. We roll into the previous events. The advantages, a quality verification. You know, if you know somebody had a really good route that people were excited about and talk about, oh, I love that, I want to do that one again. Well, you can search on Ride with GPS by that event name, and you may find the event's original file, but you'll also find rider files, people that did Red River Riot. You know, you can search for Red River Riot, and even though maybe our event route may not be viewable to everyone on the public, people that rode that route will save it as Red River Riot, and you're able to see their information, for example. The timeliness is an advantage of the events. You know that the Red River Riot was held first weekend in April, so it's recent information, it's recent data. When you do a search on Ride with GPS, you can, again, you can see the created dates and the updated dates. Multiple distances likely from previous events. The Ride with GPS functionality does allow you to search for routes by specific distances. So if you know you don't want to do anything over 50 miles, but you want it to be over 40 miles, and you want it to start within, you know, 20 miles of Munster, Texas, you can search for routes that fit those criteria. Accessibility of data through multiple sources, platforms. Well, not really applicable for Ride with GPS. You would be accessing the data exclusively through Ride with GPS, but it does give you the opportunity to import the data in almost any format you could ever need. The downsides to previous events for route sources, potential for trespassing. Well, quite frankly, that does apply to Ride with GPS as well. I highly recommend researching routes before you go out on them. Again, that'll be a future episode. Resupply options might be event specific. That also applies to Ride with GPS. Data source could be unreliable due to bailouts, missed turns. Again, also applies to Ride with GPS if you utilize ride data versus route data. And traffic control may have been part of the event. Again, that also applies to Ride with GPS. And those previous event cons that are so lockstep with the Ride with GPS cons, and quite frankly, any other platforms that are out there, those cons right there are the main reason that I highly recommend doing proper research before you go out on any new ride, any new route. Again, That's a future episode. Club subscription services, the pros, the advantages was consistency of and data standardization. That obviously applies to Ride with GPS. Some of the downsides to clubs and subscription services, cost. Yeah, it may or may not apply to Ride with GPS. Obviously, again, the functionality we're talking about in this particular episode is what's available in their free service. So that doesn't apply in that case. But the tools that Ride with GPS offers at those higher of levels of service can definitely be worthwhile. So there may be a cost involved. Limited relevance, not really applicable to Ride with GPS. Going back to the online routing sites in general, pros, obviously these are all going to apply to Ride with GPS. Variety, access, standardization of usage, getting familiar with how it works. The searchability is just so huge. I highly encourage you to just use a Ride with GPS free account and see how the searchability does work. Now, one thing I want to bring up, this is extremely important and relevant as of today, because it's something we're running into with our Hell of the North Texas routes. I know this sounds like a Ride with GPS commercial, and it's really not. They're not paying me to do this. I'm showing you my primary tool. I'm explaining my primary tool that I use. It, in my world, it does have a major downside. I'm going to call it a flaw. They probably don't want me to say that, but it is what it is. I understand why they're doing it. I understand where they're hoping to go. It just doesn't work right now. They have a road surfaces checkbox sort display feature. It's an option that you can search by that it is also a data point on the routes themselves, the maps themselves, where it basically tells you paved versus unpaved percentage of a route. That information is bogus. It's terrible. It's horrible. Ignore it. Like right now, I'm fielding a plethora of emails for our Hell of the North Texas routes. Oh, so I should bring my road bike because it's 90% paved. No, it's not 90% paved. That's bad data. So Ride with GPS is not perfect. But outside of that surface data tool, and my understanding is in some areas of the world, the country, it works fantastic. In Texas, it's horrible. But basically, you can search by multiple criteria and find just about any sort of route you want to. But it still does take some research. Some of the cons from the online routing sites, again, the cost potentially may or may not apply to a ride with GPS. Questionable routes quality can definitely still apply to a ride with GPS, particularly. Routes versus ride data. Again, it could just be a fantasy route that no one's ever been on. And if you just hop on your bike and follow the lines, you may be going off at the edge of a cliff or something like that. Questionable ride data. If you say, well, I'm not going to rely on routes information. I'm only going to import information that's from people that actually rode certain routes and take their actual ride data as opposed to what was just plotted on a map. Again, that ride data could be erroneous as well. And just like any online tool, any computer tool, it does take a little bit of computer comfort, technical expertise with the platform, getting familiar with how things work. And this is definitely not an episode to train people how to use Ride with GPS. The main thing you can do is hop on it and start using it. Now, one of the things I didn't touch on, well, I touched on a little bit, but didn't go in depth on, a huge advantage of Ride with GPS is if you have a navigation device, Ride with GPS allows you to export that data from Ride with GPS and or import it into your navigation device, be it Garmin, Wahoo, Hammerhead, whatever tool that just takes basic GPX data. You're able to export in just about every format imaginable. If you don't have a navigation device already, well, you can upgrade to one of their higher level services that will include the Ride with GPS navigation app, which works very well. Quite frankly, I use the Ride with GPS navigation app when I'm scouting and marking routes almost exclusively because it gives me turn-by-turn notifications just like a car GPS. If you have one of the upgraded services, you can actually access the navigation app, or if you go to a Spinistry event or utilize the club's ministry library, routes library. We provide free access to the Ride with GPS navigation app at our club's ministry events and any of the routes that people access from the club's ministry library. We'll do a future episode that goes more in depth on the particulars of finding and navigating those quality routes, but this should be a pretty good introduction. And if you start working with things and start having questions, then that next episode will be more relevant at that time. And then somewhere down the road, we will do a series on creating routes as well. I know that one is going to be a niche within a niche within a niche, very specialized audience for that. We're not expecting thousands upon thousands of people to be listening to these or viewing these. But if that's something that does interest you, be sure to subscribe and see as we build on this information. Thanks, everyone, for joining us for this one. Spinistry Chat out.